Good morning. Welcome to the October 19th Board of Supervisors meeting. I would invite you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. You say with me,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and I hate to start this out on a kind of a sad note, but I think it is appropriate that we take a moment of silence and remember four incredible people that gave their lives going down to help others. Some of them I did not know. One of them I have known for 25 years, and incredible individual. And so I'd ask you to join me for a moment of silence, if you would, for those that we've lost, for their families, and for their friends. Thank you. Madam Clerk, changes to the board agenda.
Changes to today's agenda under added item on consent is A3, a request to approve three fiscal year 2010-2011 renewal contracts with Beverly Health and Rehabilitation Services Incorporated, Crestwood Behavioral Health Incorporated, and Silmar Health and Rehabilitation Center Incorporated to provide residential and intensive mental health services for services and locked facilities. Recommend approval, instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing page 1 of the staff report to correct the recommendation to read request to approve and sign three renewal contracts. The replacement page is attached for your approval. Amended item hearings is C2, a hearing to consider a resolution to certify the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector Trail final environmental impact report. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing Exhibit A. The original included a total of 5 findings, 2 of which should not have been included, as they were related to a future action to approve the actual construction of the project. The revised exhibit is attached for your approval. An added item on closed session conference with real property negotiator. Item 12, proper description is APN 044151009, near northwest corner of Highway 227 and Price Canyon Road, Old Edna. Parties with him negotiating, Craig W. Stoller. Instructions to negotiator, price, terms, and conditions. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements. And those are your changes.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll move right into consent. I have a number of requests to speak on some of the items. First up will be Attorney Bianchi, please, on A1, and then will be followed by Glenn Marshall on A15. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Shirley Bianchi, and I don't know if this makes any difference at all, but on the staff report for the San Simeon Creek Bridges, it mentions that the Rocky Butte, it refers to the Rocky Butte Homeowners Association. We're not a homeowners association. We're just an association of people who live up there. We've never gotten around to being legal, or we have a good time when we party. And we come together on items like the San Simeon Creek Bridges. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to assure former Supervisor Bianchi, we have no question about the legality of the Rocky Butte Homeowners Association.
they're a fine bunch
of people.
Yes, we
and deserve bridges to be rebuilt, which
yes.
I'm glad to say is going to happen.
We do want the bridges.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Marshall, followed by Mr. Wynn.
Good morning, sir. Jim. Supervisors, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Item A15 is a real parcel map. It was in front of your board on October 5th as a consent agenda item, and it was pulled by your board for staff to allow staff time to look to see if the ordinance complied with 3090, and that was brought up during public testimony or public hearing during the consent. The county surveyor has looked at this, and we've reviewed Ordinance 3090, which basically equates to Section 22.112.020 of the Land Use Ordinance. And in essence, it talks about, this is called the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area, and it applies to general plan amendments and land divisions, and it applies to land divisions as such that when the estimated water demand exceeds historic water demand, there'll be a fee that will be imposed at the time of building permit issuance. And so based on that language, the county surveyor's office feels that the map is in compliance with all the conditions of approval and recommends your board approve this item A15. And I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I'm trying to remember the piece of property there on El Campo and Los Perros Road in that arena where we went through this and it ended up in some legal challenges and they settled with the landlord. I'm trying to eliminate that if there's something we can do now, and you say it is appropriate to move forward as is, but I know that it was appropriate then, and I'm going away since Mr. Wynn is, I believe, waiting to speak on this item. See what happened, and if we can eliminate all that legal stuff, then I'd rather move that way, but I'll wait to hear from Mr. Wynn and refer it to our counsel for legal advice.
Okay, so...
Do you recall that piece of property?
I'm not familiar with that specific project. It's clear in the ordinance that the fee is based on building permit issuance and not so much on land subdivision, so I want to make that clear to your board that we're looking at approval of a final map as opposed to building permits where the fee is technically supposed to be associated with that.
But I want to go back to have a better understanding of our memorandum of understanding with Napomo Community Service District that we will not subdivide until such time that there is either water or the person going through the process agrees to pay for future water. So I'll wait till I hear Mr. Frum Wien and bring
I'll
it
back. I'll be available.
Thank you.
Mr. Wynn, please.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham. Mike Wynn from Napomo. I do wish to greet the others of you as well. We did have a difference of opinion with the Board of Supervisors some years ago. It was settled amicably without any litigation, as sensible people always try to. Out of that agreement came County Ordinance 3090, which simply said there would be no general plan amendments on the Mesa unless there was supplemental water that was designated for such a general plan and could be delivered. And that subdivisions would not be made until they paid an in-lieu fee for supplemental water. Now, if they were within the service area of one of the four major purveyors, they would be getting a will serve letter from such a purveyor, and they would be paying eventually for supplemental water. But in this case, they're outside of anybody's service area. This is a one-time payment, which, by the way, they receive benefit in perpetuity, so it's not a bad bargain for them. But this fee has not been paid, and unfortunately, we have not yet seen a fee set by your board in the last 2 years. Even though the studies are complete, and we continue to hope that could be done expeditiously, there is a second impediment to this subdivision, which is not the direct concern of the NCSD. But 8 years ago, when the Regional Water Quality Control Board changed the building standards in this area, they allowed these lots that were 1 acre to split to half acre if they could demonstrate that they would perk. To my knowledge, and your staff may tell me otherwise, no perk tests have been taken here. There's a common misconception that the Mesa is just a big pile of sand and everything perks easily. In reality, a subdivision next to this with 22 homes had 19 of the septic systems fail in the first year. So there is a hard pan aquitard there. It should be explored. We just think this is not a bad subdivision, but both of these things need to be resolved before you move ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Mr. Sajjan?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Mr. Wynn, what is your proposal? Because I'm trying to see what we have done in the past, what has come through, so that we can move forward. For the reasons that we have the understanding in place,
We can understand that Public Works finds no impediment currently. The planning department is actually the sort of the arena in which we're struggling with this. We would just like to see it held until the fee can be set and until the developer can run perk tests. If it fails a perk test, that's not our issue. We don't sewer the area. But it might be of concern to you that you would create two lots which could not have viable septic.
But there is a proper time that we can still do that. That's my understanding. Am I correct if I refer to our staff, who I name, Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yeah, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The ordinance is fairly clear that the time to collect the fee is during building permit, prior to building permit issuance. The project is served by, I believe it's Golden State Water. I believe they're the water purveyor in this area. And to respond to Mr. Wynn, a percolation test was done, and it was found to be better than satisfactory for percolation.
And you have those reports in writing?
I have those as part of the negative deck. It was the report for the percolation was done by Langer in 2007, and it demonstrated that particularly favorable conditions for septic was available.
At an appropriate time, if NCSC desires to have those copies, would you make them available, please?
I would imagine we have copies of those planning department public.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. One last request on consent. Mr. Bard on A24.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm commenting on A24, request by library to approve budget adjustment to accept $50,000 donation from Friends of the Library for a remodel and reduce county maintenance by $35,000. I heartily endorse that. And I endorse the trend towards seeking private donations for these expenditures. In my work as an environmentalist, I've been creating listservs for 11 years, supporting public agencies such as Fish and Game, and I've many times used public libraries. And I have to say, public libraries have been in crisis since the advent of the electronic age. And I'm sad to say, in this county, they're not up to speed at all, both in terms of the physical infrastructure, which very much could use some donations, but also in terms of ideology. The Electronic Freedom Foundation has been set up to help negotiate the transition. Regarding low-income people, the digital dive became a buzzword, and I would hope that people in positions of authority in this county are aware of the importance of really a sea change, and we need to get out of the old command control library model, parsimonious model, and really move forward. And we need to incorporate both Republican and Democratic ideologies because, frankly, as a progressive Democrat who does support public expenditures, when I'm butt up head against civil servants who just don't get it, I turn across the aisle. Not to the Green Party, but to my friends in the Republican Party for our critique of bureaucracy and the importance of private initiative. If the library has quasi-privatized resources, then we need to have private sector funding. And to the extent these are public resources, we need to have grievance mechanisms, we need to have responsiveness, we need to have friendly service. As an intellectual and college-educated person who was raised in a household with two doctoral degrees amongst my parents, I find frequently that public libraries cater to the lowest common denominator, which is fine. And I recognize I need to deal with my own elitism. But when I'm in the library and I'm working on Proposition 23, and I'm bumped off a computer because it's somebody else's favorite computer, that verges on a kind of favoritism and a nepotism and a hyperlocalism that's just silly. So this is a heads up to all concerns. I support public libraries, but we need to get all with the program. This is the 21st century. We do have to contend with serious issues of climate change, whether you believe in it or not. We need to get with it. We need to get some bipartisan productivity going, especially in the state of California. Support our friends at the library. And thank you very much to all the many kind donors.
That concludes the public comment or the consent request. I'm going to go back to the board. Mr. Gibson?
Items 1, 5, and 10, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, just a quick comment on item A24.
Mr. Sajjan?
I think I asked my questions for item 15, and I'm satisfied with the answers. Thank you.
Mr. Hill?
Quick comment, A3, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Have none. Let's go to the first one, A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's the transmission of the plans and specs for bridges on San Simeon Creek Road. I just want to thank the residents who are served by what remains of the existing bridges for their patience in this. It's been a rather torturous path to get to this stage. And assure them that in my most recent discussions with Public Works that there will be continued attention paid to the condition of the existing bridges during what we hope is a very wet season. So we'll look forward to construction starting next dry season.
Is there anything we need to do to, as far as a staff report to correct that that Ms. Bianchi brought to our attention? I think it's just a...
I didn't, no, the association, I mean, that just happens to be what this group of people is right. commonly referred to as, and I don't think it carries any legal.
Okay. I was hoping to break ground before I left office.
Yes, right. It's because you've been pushing Willow Road, Supervisor.
Okay, gentlemen, we'll move right along. Mr. Hill, I'll go to A3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the plans and specifications for the traffic signal, Avila Beach Drive and First Street, and anybody who knows the area knows how important this is for pedestrians, bicyclists, and even motorists. And talking to Mr. Flynn from Public Works, and I know our Public Works have been planning this. It should hopefully be operational at some point in early spring of next year, and I want to thank them. And this is paid for by the mitigation funds from the steam generator.
Okay, we're going to go back to Mr. Gibson on A5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a budget adjustment to move $25,000 forward to front some of the costs of pilot projects and technical expert support for our efforts to address particulate matter pollution on the Oceano Dunes. And Mr. Marici is in the audience. He and I have been on conference calls interviewing technical experts and in discussions a bit with state parks in the last couple weeks. And I just wanted to make colleagues aware that what we've found in the past week or so is that the matter of getting reimbursed from state parks, which is something we're pushing very hard, is, as always, complicated, and the general level of complication in this project we are seeing is substantial. So I wanted colleagues to be aware that if we can't arrange a reimbursement agreement, we may be back with other budget adjustments on this. But the work is fundamentally important. We're very fortunate to have this, which is not general fund money, I should emphasize, available to get work started so that we can have pilot projects and technical expertise in place before the spring winds in March of next year. Any questions of the detailed variety, I think Mr. Marici may be available to answer.
Questions, Mr. Marici? Mr. Patterson?
No, I just have a comment, Mr. Chair, if I may. As Supervisor Gibson stated, this is of utmost importance that we move forward on this project. It's a public health issue as well as recreation issue, and these funds are derived from off-highway vehicle use, and I think it's very appropriate that we use this pot of money to fund these studies.
Richie, you have anything to add to this?
I have nothing else to add, I think.
Well, I'm going to head up to Sacramento tomorrow, so tell me where their office is. I'll see if I can drag some money out.
I'll look them up for you. Thank you.
Roughly 9th and L, sir, but...
item number 10.
Thank you. That would be me again. And just a very brief comment. These are ADA improvements to the playground at Los Osos Community Park. And as you read in the staff report, it was pointed out to the county some time ago that there were deficiencies in the access to that particular playground, which is extremely important to the community of Los Osos. I just wanted to thank the staff of the Parks Division, Mr. Black, Mr. Cooper, Mr. Kavanaugh, all those who work on this for creative and energetic work to find money in a couple of different corners of the world that will fund this project. So once again,
the ingenuity of county staff's on full display here. We'll look forward to this project going forward, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson, A24.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment on A24 as the issue was raised during public comment on this item. The library system that we operate in San Luis Obispo County is a 50-50 partnership between the county and the communities where the libraries are located. And we rely heavily on the communities to make that contribution, and this is simply a augmentation of the library fund from Friends of the Library in San Luis Obispo. And while many counties and other jurisdictions are reducing library services and even closing libraries, here in San Luis Obispo County, we're in the process of building two new libraries, one in Cambria and one in Atascadero. And I think it's something that we can be very proud of during this time of budgetary constraints. We've set the money aside and we're moving forward. We are on the leading edge of expanding libraries and making sure that our library services are first rate.
Thank you. With that, I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Assagian, seconded by Supervisor Hill. Roll call, please.
And that's as amended?
As amended, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Assagian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes. I need a motion to approve the presentation.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Assagian, seconded by Supervisor Hill. Roll call, please.
Mr. Assagian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am. And I will go to my colleague from the 3rd District to take care of the first presentation.
Okay, it's my pleasure. Actually, we're going to be honoring Archie McLaren. I'm going to read half of it, and then Supervisor Sajjan is going to read the other half, and Supervisor Sajjan was kind enough to let me read the half that has a lot of the French phrases that I will butcher and cause an international incident, no doubt. So if Archie would come up to the lectern, most people who know Archie know him as a man of high culture, great philanthropist, and also, as you will soon see, probably the coolest dude in our county.
I think he's always recognizable with his beret that he wears, very French, the Italian car, and used to have the most colorful house in Avila, but I think that has changed somehow. But here he is.
Yeah.
So okay. Great beret, Katja.
So it's our pleasure to honor you with this resolution, Archie. Archie McLaren arrived on the central coast of California in 1974 as a representative of the legal publishing company West Publishing, and a result of his worldwide travels over the years, culminating in his retirement from West Publishing in 1990, he became well acquainted with fine cuisine and rare wine. And whereas for 23 years, Archie hosted a fine wine program, The Wine Drinker's Guide to Indulgence, on KCBX Radio, and has published many articles on fine wine for Adventures in Dining, the Telegan Tribune, New Times, and Santa Barbara Magazine. And whereas his gourmand accomplishments include the founding of Ballet of the Central Coast chapter of, and here's where he's going to have to correct me at some point, Confrere de la Chaîne des Rotissiers.
Whoa! Close enough, Adam. All
right. They have a card, probably.
Let me try it in our
memberships room. In the Vintners Club of San Francisco. Now everything looks French. The Wine and Food Society of San Francisco, the former cellar master of the Avila Bay Wine Society, former president of the Central Coast Wine Society, chairman and executive director of the San Luis Obispo Vintners and Growers Association, and the Paso Robles Westside Grand Cru, and founder and director of the International Festival of Méthode Champenois. Just sounds right. And now I'm passing it off to Supervisor Sajjan, who knows French better than I do, but...
I will read the rest with a French accent. Whereas Archie is the founder and chairman of the Central Coast Wine Classic, a prestigious and comprehensive Central Coast food and wine auction event held each July for the past 26 years, of which Mineral Wine Spectator is among its sponsors. And whereas Central Coast Wine Classic Foundation was created in 2004 as a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, whose purpose it is to fund grants for Central Coast nonprofit organizations, including those involved with studio, performing, and healing arts, the recipients of which are too numerous to list here. The total amount of funds conferred to 76 worthy nonprofit organizations, and please listen to this figure, over the last 7 years totals $1,615,943. Now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Archie McLaren for his civic and charitable contributions to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. Would you please come forward and accept the resolution?
One more,
Archie. Why don't you center and we'll all stand behind him?
Maybe some of the coolness will rub off.
Got it?
Thank you.
Sir? Absolutely.
It sounded to me that you just honored an overindulger. In all honesty, I have never, ever considered myself to be special, and I'm so grateful to you for your thoughtfulness in making me feel so today. I'll never be able to describe it. The Central Coast Wine Classic is handing grant checks out tonight, and one of the things that I wanted to encourage local 501c3s whose missions are in the studio performing and healing arts is to get in touch with me at 544-1285. It's 544-1285, and I will send an application to your nonprofit, and we'll see if we can help you in 2011. The Central Coast Wine Classic will be from July the 7th through the 10th, predominantly in Avila Beach, except for the dinner at Hearst Castle. Rejuvenation of Avila Beach this year. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Archie, and we do appreciate all that you do. I have three folks who would like to make a couple of comments here. Elias, if you would, please, and then Chris Aho and Bev Aho. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank Mr. Archie McLaren on behalf of Senior Nutrition Program board members who are here today, and myself, as well as the nonprofit organization in our community, for his hard work and support. And I also would like to thank the board for recognizing Archie today, and thank Supervisor Kacho Ashajian for helping me through this process. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bev and Chris.
Bev will go first. Good morning. My name is Beverly Aho, and I am volunteer coordinator for the Central Coast Wine Classic. And what I would like to do at this time is read the names of the beneficiaries starting in our 2004. San Luis Obispo AIDS Support Network, San Luis Obispo Special Olympics, the Art Academy of the West in Santa Barbara, Rhythmic Arts Project in Ventura. In 2005, we granted Hospice San Luis Obispo County, Santa Barbara County Bowl Foundation, Partnership of Children of San Luis Obispo County, the Clark Center Association in Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo County Arts Council, San Luis Obispo Mozart Festival, Surgical Eye Expedition of Santa Barbara, the Funds of Vineyards and Farm Workers through Tally Vineyards in Arroyo Grande. In 2006, we did San Luis Obispo International Film Festival, San Luis Obispo Arts Center, Big Brothers and Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County, the Tree of Life Pregnancy Support Center of San Luis, Hospice Partners of the Central Coast, Pacific Operatory Opera, John E. Patford Foundation of the Arts of Santa Barbara, Community Counseling Center of San Luis Obispo, Caring Colors of San Luis Obispo County, and the Wellness Community Center of the Central Coast, located in Paso Robles. In 2007, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Center of Educating Arts, Central Coast Commission on the Senior Citizens, Children's Health Initiative, Civic Ballet of San Luis Obispo, there goes that French again, Enhancement Health and Wellness, Opera, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo Chamber Orchestra, San Luis Obispo Vocal Arts and International Choral Festival, the University of Santa Barbara Arts and Lectures, San Luis Obispo Children's Museum, San Luis Obispo Symphony Orchestra, Transitional Food and Shelter, and finally, Options Family Services. Our grants, as was stated earlier, have funded over $1.6 million in the Performing Arts, Studio Arts, and Healing Arts. For more information on grants and also information on becoming a volunteer for this next year's Classic, I'd like for you to visit www.centralcoastclassic.org.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you for your time.
Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Chris Aho, and I'm the logistics coordinator for the Central Coast Wine Classic. I'd like to continue the process reading the rest of the names of the recipients. In 2008, French Hospital, Hearst Cancer Resource Center, Assistance League of San Luis Obispo County, Atascadero Loaves and Fishes, Cal Poly Arts, El Camino Homeless Association in Atascadero, PCPA Theater Fest, Project Angels Bearing Gifts, San Luis Obispo Wind Orchestra, San Luis Obispo YMCA, Santa Barbara International Film Festival, Santa Barbara Center for the Performing Arts, Tierra Sagrada, the Sacred Earth Foundation. In 2009, Community Youth Performing Arts Center of Santa Barbara, Food Bank of Santa Barbara County, Foundation for the Performing Arts Center of San Luis Obispo, Friends of Prado Day Center in San Luis Obispo, Friendship Adult Daycare Center of Santa Barbara, Gate Help Griffin Society, Public Radio KCBX, Los Padres Forest Watch in Santa Barbara, Morro Bay High School Band, Paderewski Festival in Paso Robles, Santa Maria Philharmonic Society, Senior Volunteer Services of San Luis Obispo, Transitions Mental Health Association of San Luis Obispo, and Respite Care for the Central Coast Alzheimer's Association. In 2010, the Adelaida Historical Foundation, Paso Robles, Ballet Theater of San Luis Obispo, Cognitive Fitness and Innovative Therapy, Santa Barbara, Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County Adult Day Services Program, CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates of San Luis Obispo County, Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County in Paso Robles, God's Haven for Children, San Luis Obispo, Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, North County Dance and Performing Arts Foundation, Paso Robles, Pacific Wildlife Care, Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo County Historical Society, Studios on the Park, Paso Robles, United Cerebral Palsy Work in Santa Barbara, and finally, the Senior Nutrition Program, as we heard, of San Luis Obispo County. So once again, the Central Coast Wine Classic, founded and chaired by our honoree today, Archie McLaren, has granted over $1.6 million to our local nonprofit community. Please let it be known for all nonprofits that would like to receive funding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. When we hear of this hard work and the contributions that folks give and how willing they give of their time, it raises my hopes in the human spirit. Thank you, Archie. We appreciate all that you've done and all of the folks that work with you. Mr. Patterson, did you have?
Yes, I just had a quick comment. I, too, personally want to thank Archie. I had the opportunity this past July to volunteer in Avila with my friends, the Ahos, and we just heard the breadth of nonprofits throughout the Central Coast that have benefited from these events, significantly benefited. $1.6 million contributed to 76 different nonprofits from throughout the Central Coast since 2004, an incredible accomplishment. And the volunteer activity, it's well organized and it's fun, and I encourage people to get involved. It is a tremendous amount of fun, whether you're partaking in the wine or volunteering for the event.
Mr. Sargent?
Thank you. It's been quite a pleasure to know and work with Archie, but I would also like to take a moment and recognize the board members of Senior Nutrition who took the time from their busy schedule to be sure that
Archie Rizzi, the quite an honor that he brings to the community. Would you raise your hand? So we want to thank you for your time and your effort.
Thank you very much. We're going to move into the second item. Madam Clerk, could you introduce the next presentation, please?
That would be item B2, the presentation of the Adult Services Policy Council Annual Report for Fiscal Year 2009-10. Recommend the item be received and filed.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Gail Tutino, and I'm here representing the Adult Services Policy Council, and I want to tell you a little bit about their annual report. As you are aware, the Adult Services Policy Council consists of 45 public, nonprofit, and private services providers, boards and commissions, and elected officials who serve seniors and people with disabilities. In 2008, there were 44,000 seniors in San Luis Obispo County, and of those, approximately one-third, or 15,000, have disabilities. In addition, 11% of adults under the age of 62 in San Luis Obispo County also are living with disabilities. And as you know, they are challenged in obtaining food, shelter, essential medical care, and other basic human needs. And with all the cuts that you're painfully aware of, these services have been also cut. And funding for these services has been severely reduced. Two examples of that would be the Alzheimer's Day Centers, which had to close this year, and also the Linkages Case Management, which assisted and supported families and caregivers caring for people with complex and multiple support needs, also had to close this year because of lack of funding. But a bright spot is that the Adult Services Policy Coalition, or Council, I knew I was going to say coalition, Council is also working with the RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, and the Wilshire Community Services to institute the Good Neighbors Program. And what the Good Neighbors Program does is it matches volunteers with seniors or people with disabilities, regardless of their income, comes to their home and provides services like transportation, shopping, and home maintenance and repair. And again, this is regardless of their income level. So anyone can sign up for this program and receive these services in their home from a volunteer. And we also would like to thank Archie because we received funding for this program from the Wine Classic also. Our goals for 2010 and 2011 are the ongoing monitoring of legislative and budgetary actions, continue to advocate for seniors and disabled adults, identify translation services for people, seniors and disabled people who don't speak English, implement and sustain the Good Neighbor Program, and serve as a resource to educate the community and inspire awareness and action that promotes improvement in the quality of life for seniors and disabled persons. We'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors, especially the ones that come to our meetings and send their representatives, and we're looking forward to a long collaborative relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tino. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been my pleasure to act as the board's formal representative to Adult Services Policy Council since 2007. Actually, I should accurately state that it's been the pleasure to have my office represent this board, as my legislative assistant, Sherry Espero, has made many of the meetings that I could not. And I commented to the council the other day, I was thinking back that when I took office, I knew that the social safety net, the social services that could be provided by government were not what they should be. But it was only after a couple meetings of ASPC that I realized how bad it really was. And I am continually struck by the group, large group of more than 40 participants that sit around the table once a month to talk about issues, to collaborate on solutions.
They work remarkably together to patch together a system that takes care of those who need our help. I'm particularly struck by a whole project they did that they spoke to last year on the continuum of care. Every service for every age that they consider lined out and looking for the gaps, looking for those cracks through which people might slip and working to try to seal up those cracks. So this county should be immensely proud of the Adult Services Policy Council, and I look forward to your future progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move into the final presentation or the recognition today. That'll be our employee recognition for 25 years of service. Ms. Duke?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I am Dory Duke. Here today with me is Heather Gunderlach and Robin Mason from the Human Resources Department. We are happy to be here today to assist your board in the tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized today by the board are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. Today we are presenting three employees with clocks for 25 years of service. So I will, just as a matter of logistics, I will call the employee's name. They can come down. We will present the clock to the employee. The department head can come down and stand here at stay here at the podium and say a few words. The employee can then respond and come to the board for a congratulatory handshake, and we'll take a picture. So our first employee is from the assessor's office today, Brenda Dye. Brenda, if you could stand at the far podium.
Actually, can I come over to this?
And?
Yep. You have to push that little green button.
Hit the base.
Hit the base.
There you go.
A man of few words, Mr. Bordenero.
Few. Don't worry. I barely have a voice. Get through it, laryngitis. But I wouldn't miss this for nothing, Brenda. Congratulations to Brenda Dye for 25 years. And we did some calculations in the office. I'm not sure how she's worked here 25 years, because she says to everyone she's 39. That makes her stutter when she was about 14. She is a local girl, graduated from Royal Grande High, before eventually starting her career with the County of San Luis Obispo. She's held six different job titles, starting as an intermediate typist clerk, cal clerk, senior clerk, all the way up to, and she is now a assessment technician supervisor. For the past 10 years, she supervises our public service and appraisal support section. In 1988, she won an employee suggestion award from the Board of Supervisors for improving addresses, changes on bills, supplemental assessments. She's been recognized for her work by the County Sheriff's Department, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, regional ride share. She's been employed about seven different times, but you didn't even know that, did you? She does take extreme pride in her work. She's always been a very high producer since the first day she started working in the assessor's office. And she's the type of person that you can always count on whenever you need help. She'll be there. I mean, it's that simple. And if any of you have seen her drive, you'll know that she'll be there very quickly. And as a mother of three boys, she's learned a very valuable skill of keeping the assessor and the assistant assessor in line. It doesn't seem like we can get away with anything anymore with Brenda there. But Brenda, you're a phenomenal asset to the office and to the county as a whole. Thank you for the 25 years that you've given to the county. I'm hoping you'll work another 25. Because according to your math, that means you'll retire at 64. So, I appreciate you very much, and so does the entire office. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now you can roast Tom.
No, I don't want to roast him. I'd like to roast Kirk, but
this time will come.
Thank you very much.
Brenda, you can come up to the board.
Congratulations.
We'd all like to be able to turn that clock back.
Well, I guess I'm going to get in there, too, somehow.
Go, Willie.
Don't run over.
Now, they know. Wow. They get their toes out of the way.
Our next employee being recognized is from Social Services, Janice Sykes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Lee Collins, Department of Social Services. Knowing Janice, I know she's very excited to be the center of attention today. I have a lovely prepared statement here, but I want to say a couple of things afterwards. Janice Sykes came to Social Services from probation, where she began as a probation officer in July 1985. I think I saw Mr. Salio earlier, and I would urge him just to stay away. Since 1996, Janice has worked her way from Social Worker 1 to Social Worker 4, where she is currently an emergency response worker in North County. In this role, Janice responds to allegations of child abuse and neglect, often working nights and weekends to ensure the safety and well-being of children in our community. You know, as a first responder, social workers in the emergency response section are like police officers. They see things that the rest of us don't have to, and it's Janice's unique skill and presence of mind that enables her to excel in this position. She demonstrates strong initiative in carrying out assignments. She is able to quickly establish rapport, gain recognition and respect with families, superiors, and peers. She displays a strong incentive to perform at her best and always provides the maximum effort. Janice is trustworthy, credible, and is always optimistic, even under the most adverse conditions. Janice looks to continuously develop her own professional growth and represents a professional image when representing the department and the county. The Department of Social Services, the County of San Luis Obispo, and the children and families of our community are very fortunate to be served by an employee of Janice Sykes' caliber. She's terrific. On a more personal note, I can say that I always have appreciated Janice's very wry sense of humor, the fact that she is assertive, speaks her mind, even knowing sometimes that there are others who may not agree with her, but I appreciate that to my heart. And it's a pleasure to see Janice always, and it's a pleasure to know that you've provided 25 years of service to this community. And as Mr. Bordenaro suggested, I hope you give us 25 years more, Janice. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the large clock.
It's all part of the deal. Yeah, it's a package.
Punishment for being a good employee. You don't get your clock until the picture's taken.
Now our final employee being recognized today is from the Clerk Recorder's Office, Diane Grayton.
morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I want to echo my fellow department heads in congratulating these employees and Diane for 25 years of service to the county. I'm proud to say that I have worked with Diane all 25 of those years. We both started just out of grade school, so calculate our ages from there. Excuse me, I have to put on my glasses here. So maybe I didn't start right out of grade school. She's worked her way up through many positions in our office and has finally has risen to the rank of division supervisor and continues to be challenged and take on additional roles in our office. She is, as anybody in our office and our public will attest, our go-to person for her knowledge of our historical, both official and vital records. And she relishes that role when we get a bunch of grade school students in to excite them about what's on file in our office and what they can find out about past generations and even some of their relatives in our office. We've implemented many new systems in her time, in her 25 years, and she's had a hand in those improvements and making all that work. And again, I want to thank her for her years of service as well as to her fellow employees who got to get away from the office, those that were busy issuing absentee ballots and doing all the rest of the office today, work of the office today.
Thank you. When I started this office, I had no idea what county government was about, and I have learned so much about our local history, about people, about myself. Thank you.
Not the first one to cry before us.
Not even budget time.
<That's true. laughs> He was thinking about the next time he asked a question.
No, actually, that's getting better. I just want to say that over the years, I've worked with a lot of very interesting people, and it's been, like I said, it's very educational, and I want to recognize the people that I work with because they are amazing people, and they're very dedicated, and I couldn't do it without them. Thank you.
One thing that we've learned as a board, and I've heard this over the years, is that we know how to pay attention and say yes, ma'am, to our clerks of the board. They are the princesses of our board here. Thank you very much. We do appreciate you. Okay. Allow a minute or so for folks to exit, and we're going to get into the public comment. See, Julia's left.
Nope.
Oh, she's still here? There she is. First up will be Judy Rollwald, followed by David Church.
Good morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Now it's back to work after celebrating our employees of 25 years. Just an update on the upcoming election. We're now 14 days away. Close of registration was yesterday, but we still have another week that we can mail out ballots for requests that are received by next Tuesday, October 26. We're seeing a huge activity in both our registration and in our vote-by-mails. We've issued over 82,000 vote-by-mail ballots and have about 13,000 of those back. So we're expecting quite an onslaught of return ballots over the next 2 weeks. To make our office more accessible for those who have trouble getting down to us between regular business hours, we will be open both this Saturday and Saturday, October 30th, from 9 to 1, so voters can come in, pick up their ballots, drop off their ballots, whichever they'd like to do, and we encourage them stay involved in this election. We're very pleased. When you read the polls about the apathy that's out there, we're not seeing it here in San Luis County, so I'm hoping that we'll see a high turnout and that interest will continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. I think the only other ones that will have a collective sigh of relief will be the candidates. Mr. Church, followed by Laura Sprague, please.
Good morning. David Church, Executive Officer for LAFCO. And I have a pleasure of actually awarding an award. And I know, shocking. CalLAFCO, our statewide organization that represents LAFCO's, held its annual conference in Palm Springs October 6th through the 8th. And at the annual Achievement Awards, they recognize outstanding achievements by LAFCOs throughout the state. It's a statewide competition. This year they had, I think, over 50 applicants for like 8 or 9 awards. So they had a lot of competition statewide. This Napomo Community Services District, San Luis Obispo County, and San Luis Obispo LAFCO were honored with the Government Leadership Award. And this was for their collective efforts in developing the Memorandum of Agreement, we call it an MOA, that helps implement what we call a sphere of influence, a 20-year planning boundary. And I just want to, the award is presented to the decision-making bodies at a city, county, or special district which have furthered good government efforts in California. And I think it's a very special award in that regard. I think it represents the city, the district, the county, and LAFCO kind of going the extra mile in terms of cooperation, being persistent, and being solution-oriented in terms of coming to agreement and getting something like this done. So I'd like to thank Napomo CSD. I'd also like to thank the county, as well as the county planning staff, for really their extra effort in getting this one done. And I think it really clearly identifies as district and county intentions and really raises the level of trust between agencies. And I think that is a laudable goal and really a great achievement for the county and the district. And we have an award. There you go.
You can applaud yourself. There you go. Anyway, would you like to share part of the MOU?
Oh yeah, we also would like to take a picture, as a matter of fact. So, but we'll have go ahead, Mike.
Why don't you go down
Mike, why don't you come here?
Somebody from planning
Church, and we all stand behind them. Okay, we'll stand behind them. We'll all participate in the picture. The collective effort.
One more.
Mr. Chairman, if I mine and Supervisor Ashajan might want to chime in here. The business of planning relationships between counties and special districts, cities and counties, and cities and special districts can get quite complicated. LAFCO often labors rather in anonymity, and a lot of people think that it's a stand-up comedy club. And maybe sometimes it is the Local Agency Formation Commission. I just want to pass my thanks to the staffs of all three groups for the hard work that they did. You look at that document and you look at the maps that detail the different relationships and how things are going to be moving in the next few years. It's tremendously complicated, and I really appreciate the time that staff has spent on all three agencies to work these things out.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I work with a number of CSDs. Nipomo's was a little more challenging, and appreciate members of the LAFCO, both staff and commissioners, who took the time and visited the site. And that's why I feel like this is a collective effort that got us to this point. And Mr. Church, I want to thank your staff for the great job you folks have done. I want to thank all my colleagues here, and especially members of the Napomo Community Service District and the community leaders and the community at large, because it was, as I said, the effort was collective, and we're all focused on the same issue, and that's what got us to this leadership role.
Mr. Wynn?
Thank you.
On behalf of Board Chairman Harrison, who could not be here today, he had an emergency vacation in Hawaii. But I also want to express our community's appreciation both for your count, for your staff. Your planning staff in particular have worked very closely with us, and we've had our tensions and times we struggled. Mr. Church was always there to be sort of the umpire, and but with the three parties working together, we have had an excellent collaborative effort, and the results have been good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Laura Sprague, please, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to provide my comment. And I would say that you'll find in my comment here that LAFCO is not anonymous to me or to my friends and neighbors. My name is Laura Sprague. My husband and I own property on Earhart Road in Arroyo Grande. He'd be here this morning, except he's doing Air Force Reserve duty. We want to express how alarmed we are about the Price Canyon project being proposed by City of Pismo Beach after we read the environmental impact report. We are even more alarmed after reading the LAFCO staff report prepared for LAFCO's upcoming meeting later this week. In its effort to expand its sphere of influence and annex the Godfrey and King parcel property, Pismo Beach has repeatedly failed to observe the recommendations and guidelines provided by LAFCO. I have discussed the Price Canyon development with my neighbors and friends who live off of Old Oak Park Road, West Ormonde, and in the Toucan Terrace development in Pismo. They are also very concerned about the Price Canyon development project. We realize that some growth and development is inevitable and could be beneficial for the surrounding communities if done correctly. However, as San Luis Obispo County citizens, we expect that projects of this magnitude, such as the Price Canyon project, will occur carefully and responsibly. Such projects must follow the procedures and guidelines in effect to promote efficient provision of public services, preserve our agricultural resources, discourage urban sprawl, and they need to protect our limited existing water supply and fragile ecosystems, including Pismo Creek. The current Price Canyon development plan ignores and violates many principles of sensible planning for controlled growth. And the most glaring violations concern water, traffic, and roads, common problems. A source of great concern for those of us immediately surrounding the Godfrey and King parcels is that the city of Pismo Beach is planning for urban density development in nearly 800 acres of land outside its sphere of influence, land that is currently designated as rural and agricultural by the county's general plan. It is the opinion of my husband and I, and my friends and neighbors, that the Price Canyon project and the manner in which Pismo Beach is pursuing this is outright irresponsible. We are deeply troubled to think of what will happen if Pismo Beach succeeds in expanding its sphere of influence and subsequently annexes the property it wants to. It's frightening to think of the consequences if this project goes forward as planned. As currently conceived, the Price Canyon development project is inappropriate for Slo County and its residents. I had more to say, but I've run out of time, so I want to thank you very much for your attention to my concerns, and hopefully you'll give it some thought. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Lindy Owen, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning, Lindy Allen from Los Osos. I missed you last week. I was down in Mexico, the great democracy of Mexico. And what I realized is in Mexico, everyone accepts that the government is corrupt. And unfortunately, America is a little behind the times in understanding how deep corruption runs. I want to talk about the fact that the Los Osos situation has the water basin has been mismanaged, as has been spoken over the last 3.5 years to you, for over 20 years, more like 30 to 40. And where does this come from, and what do we have as a result? We have a saltwater intrusion problem that was ignored by people like Wallace and Associates, who were paid to manage our water basin and basically gave us no information to alert us to the fact that we were reaching a crisis era. We could have been taking water from the upper aquifer, treating it, and adding it into our supply, easily 20 years ago, and we wouldn't be in the situation we are today. Now we're close to the end. We've got a little less than one-third of our water supply left, and you're proposing projects like a sewer that doesn't address water reuse in real any real form. It basically considers it the inferior part of the project. The regional board, I mean, it starts maybe with developers in the mid-90s thinking that a Cadillac sewer would solve two wonderful things for them. It would get the riffraff out, would be overpriced for the low-income people, and it would start the growth boom, which would end the building moratorium. Unfortunately, the water situation kind of crept in. Now there will be no building until we do get a water source since we wasted it. Regional Water Quality Control Board allowed 1,240 new homes to go in with the blessing of the county and all the developers that scooped up that profit. Right when we were told that we had density problems with pollution and we did have water problems. So anyway, I'm very disturbed that the update talked about the issues that you've done, which is basically take away the competitive bidding process. I believe the 218 vote that we assessed ourselves $25,000 per home for will be void and null if there is no design-build competitive process. That was written into our ballots. Or it was promised that there would be no blank check. The rates and charges and no cap mean you could add as much money as the project cares to suck from our lives onto our bills and our monthly costs. And number one, the project does not address saltwater intrusion, your biggest failure at accepting what you have before you. Thank you.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Eric Greening, please. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. My husband and I have resided in the community for 38 years, so we have seen the progress, or lack thereof. Last Tuesday, the chairman of the board chastised those in the audience from Los Osos that made what he considered disrespectful noises or comments. Is it expected of people looking at losing everything they have worked throughout the years of their lives to sit passively by and accept a increase in spin and inaccuracies like the proverbial potted plant when this board remains impassive and does not correct staff or justify the board's actions or inactions? Questions of concern of the reuse of Los Osos and the water problems are not responded to by this board. There is no justification given for the silence or lack of response from any member of this board. Surely this board, at least one of the board members, has reviewed the questions that the people have asked. The residents have asked questions, but there is no transparency, and the process for the procedure of contracting for the extremely expensive project is not transparent. You all profess to have been or are businessmen now. Would you not have questions and want answers before you signed a contract? You would not sign a blank check. Yet you are asking the residents in the Prohibition Zone to do just exactly that. You are gambling with the lives of those of us that you are answerable to. Consider this before you go further with this unquestionably expensive project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Excuse me, followed by Piper Riley, please.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm going to hit quite a few different topics, including some others are bringing up. First, I would like to thank you for the moment of silence at the beginning. When you lose people that special in our community, you realize that every one of us every day is precious, and we don't take the time to say that often enough. We don't know who is suddenly going to be missing among us. And just 2 weeks ago, I was walking down the street, and Roger Lyon spotted me and handed me some avocados. He was that kind of guy, and I just have to say, I don't know the other people that we lost as well, but my gosh, what a human being. Relative to the issues in Price Canyon, I would just remind everyone that the LAFCO meeting will be on Thursday at 9 a.m., and I wonder if your board, before this is lost to the county decision-making process, would like to refer this project to the Water Resources Advisory Committee. It's not one that we've sunk our teeth into, but if there are serious water supply issues, perhaps we should. There will be a speaker a little bit later in the lineup relative to the PG&E Smart Meter program. I thought I was going to follow her rather than precede her, but just as a tag along, I also believe this should be something that your board holds a hearing on to get the facts presented from different points of view and different information bases. And a particular question I would have on that is, why isn't this a project subject to CEQA? When you have an individual cell tower, for example, it generally is. Maybe that's because it has a physical profile or something, I don't know. But I know that the cumulative impact of various forms of electromagnetic smog is something that should be of great concern to the human species as well as other species, such as bees. My main topic, which I don't have much time for now, was going to be first flush. We seem to be getting it because we're getting fairly light rains. It doesn't seem to be flushing all at once, and it may be the bulk of it is yet ahead. But I would like to see us establish a regular calendar of first flush reports each fall at the appropriate season. What monitoring are we doing? What information are we getting? Define the problem. And then I guess my final comment in relation to appreciating each other, I know we're not supposed to speak personally, but having heard Supervisor Hill's French, I would just have to say that if he ever leaves the realm of public service, perhaps we can make some more Inspector Clouseau movies.
Very good, Mr. Green. Ms. Riley, followed by Mr. Dendefana.
Good morning. I am Piper Riley from Los Osos. The county has not yet accepted the LOWWP, but you're about to approve additional rates and charges on the project, which we blindly assessed ourselves for $25,000 and not a penny more. I say blindly because the ballot indicated neither specific project nor cost. Now you want to increase our assessment because you don't have enough money to pay for the capital costs of this extremely expensive project choice. The PZ has to pay this additional cost because there's not enough water for the undeveloped lot owners to build, so why should they assess themselves? As a board, you allow the elimination of the promised fair comparison of technologies, which would have provided best value, in order to guarantee that the highly impactive and expensive traditional system, which we stopped in 2005, could be built instead. This is the blank check that we protested against at the 218 hearing 3 years ago and $8 million ago. For more than 30 years, the county and the water board have ignored the dire saltwater intrusion problem in Los Osos. Scientific evidence shows that the septics are not the culprits of the coastal water pollution, but rather that leaking conventional gravity collection and treatment systems are. So in essence, you are forcing us to put in a system which is not only grossly overpriced, it will also pollute. The CMC, Morro Bay, Cayucas, Oceana, all conventional failures. After change orders, archaeological delays, and paying for a secure water supply, no matter what that may be, the inflated cost of this proposed project will drive thousands out of their homes. It happened in Cape Coral, and that was before the economy tanked. In New Orleans, they recently stopped the financial bleeding done by MWH. We cannot afford this in Los Osos, and we should not. This is no way to serve the people that you have been elected by. A public works official actively working on the LOWWP recently complained in his own hometown of Morro Bay that their proposed MWH project is not fair. CEQA was violated. There was no reasonable comparison of alternatives, just a highly impactive, inefficient, and expensive MWH traditional system shoved upon them. Sound familiar? This is totally hypocritical. There are very good and valid reasons why Los Osos is so upset. Government has grossly mismanaged our water, and now the people are supposed to fix it. And you won't even let us do it the right way. What kind of governing is this? Thank you for my time.
Thank you, Ms. Riley. Mr. DeFatta, and followed by Linda Ann, please.
Morning, Chairman Meacham, and board. Ben DeFatta here. Today's subject is like that song that I heard the other day, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? That's what's going to happen in Los Osos. I want you to know that we appreciate you giving us our 3 minutes back after Supervisor Gibson cut us down to 2 minutes last year. He didn't want to hear us. And believe me, many of us need us much more than 3 minutes to get our points across. It is the duty of every citizen to take a responsible stand to make sure that government's responsibility and responsiveness will not result in the loss of their homes. We want you to know that as cost of the wastewater project increases day by day by Mr. Gibson and his staff, there is an increased probability that more and more residences will be displaced sooner than later. The United States of America, the state of California, and its citizens is facing grave economic hardships, and it looks like things will be getting worse before they get better. In order to survive, many of us have had to tighten our belts and cut back on our expenses for Los Osos. There will be an expense that is far greater than anything our residents have ever seen. There is frustration from struggling property owners to stay afloat. Yes, there is to stay afloat. You bet there is, and your board, the servants of this county, know this, but the degree of your board's acknowledgement is debatable at best. Negligent at its worst. I have here your voters supplement here, and here Mr. Cacho, Supervisor Cacho, just one paragraph, cut it short, by imposing a strict cap on spending and he will audit government bureaucracy to root out waste. Surely we have a lot of waste in this almost $200 million gravity sore when we can save 10, 20, 30, 40 million dollars going with an alternative. Fraud, we have, I'm sure, anyway, fraud and abuse, I won't get into that, but we have been abused, you have not listened, and I'm sure you five all say that at election time, I'm going to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. Your record shows the opposite is what's happened to us. My friends, you have heard us over and over, and we have gotten to know each other pretty well. But with all the avenues we have gone down in the last 3 years, with all the major changes that have occurred by your colleagues, your other four can't see the expensive mistakes that were made by Mr. Gibson and his staff. They should be fired right away, and our time is running out. I don't understand why you don't take this project away from him and get an unbiased study by an out-of-town firm that knows other technologies besides gravity.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta.
Thank you, sir.
Linda Ann, please, followed by Lacey Cooper. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Linda. Thank you for this time, Board of Supervisors. I'm presenting a matter that is probably not known to most of you in detail. Probably you know a little bit. There's a mandatory program by PG&E to install smart meters. These meters have serious problems that need to be worked out before installing them in our county. We should be able to opt out as a community since we will be paying for them ultimately. I called PG&E and they informed me that I could not opt out. Already the state of Hawaii and 18 California communities in California, including San Francisco County and city, don't want them and have moratoriums or laws banning them. Watsonville, in their emergency ordinance, finds that, quote, there is a current and immediate threat to the public health, safety, and welfare. and that the smart meter will be, quote, subjecting residents of Watsonville to the privacy, security, health, accuracy, and consumer fraud risks of the unproven smart meter technology. Consumer complaints already include security and privacy issues. There have been privacy breaches already documented. Burglars, criminals with wireless detection equipment can tell when the premises are unoccupied. Skyrocketing utility bills. 100 people in Bakersfield attended a meeting to complain with bills 2 to 4 times higher due to malfunctioning smart meters. Damaged electronics. A lot of the people have lost their expensive TVs, Bose speakers, etc. Fire hazards. There have been 15 fires related to smart meters reported in Bakersfield. But what probably eclipses them all are the serious public health issues and environmental impacts from this wireless network they want to set up and have set up in other communities. There's a huge public outcry. Many people have gotten sick from the smart meters. They complain of heart palpitations, dizziness, insomnia, headaches, hearing problems, flu-like symptoms, worsening of existing problems, etc., etc. They get better when they get away from smart meter communities and are looking for areas where there are no smart meter community wireless grid. Anything living may be affected by these wireless environments, especially pine trees, birds, bees, and amphibians. There are several studies, many, many studies of evidence of harm way below what the FCC is complying with. With this history, is it not urgent that we also call for a moratorium as soon as possible to investigate before allowing PG&E to deploy a technology already proven to be of questionable safety? Doesn't forcing this technology on unsuspecting citizens endanger our rights to privacy, liberty, and good health? Thank you, and if I can provide any other information, I have a ton of it.
Thank you, ma'am. Lacey Cooper, and last to speak, Jeff Bard, please. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, supervisors. I'm here. I have a request today, and first I need to recap some things that happened a couple weeks ago. On October 5th, after a long day of listening to items about the sewer, you passed a number of action items, and one of them at the end was the rates and charges ordinance, and I wanted to talk about the flat and variable rates. I believe Mr. Gibson had recommended a 90 flat, 10 variable rate, and then Mr. Patterson had talked about a 55-45 variable for conservation. And one of the unintended consequences of that is that for a family of three kids, it'll be $60 more a month on their bill. And my request is, $60 more than, say, a single person, or at $40 to $60 more than two people. Okay, so it's $60 more than one person. Anyway, what I'd like, my request is to ask staff to look at perhaps a compromise. The 90-20 is good, but maybe you could come up with something between the two so poor to moderate income families aren't impacted so heavily. We also already have a tiered water rate, so that's where we get conservation also. I'm just concerned about, will this really help people conserve? Because I could see one or two people say, well, I'm saving $60, so now I can, have a big garden and, a lot of landscape. And meanwhile, the families are struggling to cut back on showers, laundry, all that kind of stuff, because the disparity is so great. So if you could ask the staff to look, bring back some possibilities, like something between, 25 flat, 75 variable, something like that, and then pull it for discussion, because it's going to come to your board next week. If you could pull it for discussion so you could look at it. I'm just really concerned it's going to have such a disparity, is going to have a real impact. And so it doesn't quite balance out, I think, with the conservation aspect. And so I just ask those two things, have the staff look at it and pull it for discussion. And also because people, it's going to be the first reading of the ordinance if, all goes the way it's planned. And people also need to understand what a protest proceeding is. It's very different from a vote. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bart.
Jeff Bart. As Upland Research Science Action and Upland Research Science Associates, I was happy to connect with the pioneers at Cal Poly this weekend. And I was reminded that meeting the challenges of the future in this county and in this country and this planet requires more than simply technological fixes, more than also human engineering or political science. It really requires connecting with our sense of community and the values that are enshrined in the various faith traditions. To that end, this morning I reviewed a little book by Thomas Merton, The Way of Chuang Tzu. And there's quite an apropos, a very brief quote from a hat salesman and a capable ruler. Madame Chuang did business in silk ceremonial hats. He traveled with a load of hats to the wild men of the South, the wild men with shaved heads and tattooed bodies. What did they want with silk ceremonial hats? Well, what do we want with democracy, public participation, community access, voter ballot initiatives? If we disregard the content of that citizen input. So, with all due respect, I would like to join the Los Osos community and say, Houston, we have a problem. We're not going to solve that problem this morning, and I need to do a lot more study. We have two very capable candidates. We will send one of those two very capable candidates to Sacramento, and hopefully that will provide an opportunity to re-examine Los Osos water and wastewater issues. Clearly, the project as it stands now is an onerous burden on the community, and I would suggest we need to re-examine alternative paradigms, whether that be STEP-SEG or others. Frankly, I believe the problem is actually coming from solid waste, not from liquid yellow water waste. So maybe we can actually envision new methods of gray water, you know, segregating. There's a lot of different options, and they're going to require that we, you know, put on our thinking caps. And I'd like to quote one of the earlier speakers, but say, instead of brother, can you spare a dime, brother, can you spare a paradigm? So hopefully, after the new era dawns in Sacramento, we can join hands at various levels of government and rethink this and in a non-vindictive, non-accusative, you know, in a positive framework, re-examine this and possibly come up with new solutions. Similarly, very briefly, on Measure H, I've been opposing it, but there are problems with Prado Road coming in north. We need to come in south of Damon Garcia for wetlands.
Thank you.
And other reasons. Thank you.
That concludes public comment. I want to comment quickly, if I might, on regarding the smart meters. PG&E did come in, and I don't know, I think they met with all of my colleagues. I know they met with me to talk about the smart meters, and from what I understood from them, they were going to be doing quite a public outreach to let them know what was going on. Now, whether that's happened or not, apparently has not, but I'd be more than happy to contact Patricia Wilmore with PG&E to find out what their plans are in terms of public outreach. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the matter of the rates and charges hearing, there was a couple of misstated points as to the relation of the rates and charges hearing with the property tax benefit assessment that was conducted in 2007. But the comment I wanted to make was that the specifics of the ordinance will be available as that ordinance is introduced on next week's agenda, the 26th. It will be introduced with the 55-45 variable split. And in the formality of that, it starts a 45-day protest hearing that will end up with a public hearing on the 14th of December. In the intervening weeks, the Los Osos Wastewater Project team is putting together an informational mailing that will go out to the community, and we have organized and have a date of December 2nd for a town hall meeting where we're going to have an extensive discussion of the details of how that rates and charges ordinance is put together, what happens to rates and charges under different scenarios as we look forward. And again, I might take this opportunity to observe again that no sewer bills, no rates and charges will actually be in anybody's mailbox until the project starts operation probably about 4 years from now. So there's much information to come. Those details are going to be public. All the details will be public as it's introduced next Tuesday, and I'm sure we'll have a substantial discussion as we move forward.
Thank you. We're going to take a break. We'll be back at 10:45. Okay. Madam Clerk, if you'd please introduce our first item for the board's discussion, please.
Your item is C1, a hearing to consider 5 proposals to establish new agricultural preserves and amend existing agricultural preserves. Recommend approval and start chairperson to sign.
Thank you.
Mr. Hogue. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. This is the time of the year that we bring the agricultural preserve related request to your board for consideration. They will be in two groups. The first is today with 5 applications. There's 2 requests to establish new preserves, which will then be followed by land conservation contracts, and then 3 requests to amend existing agricultural preserves. The next group of applications, and the second and final one, will be on November 9th. The applications that you have before you today represent a total of 442 acres, and then added in with the existing acreage in the county of land under contract, that would bring it just over 795,000 total acres in the county, and that represents 37% of the land area of the county. Terry Waller, our program manager for Ag Preserves, is going to describe each of these requests for you briefly. Unfortunately, we always get asked this every year, you have to open and close the hearing on each one. You can't do it in one hearing, but hopefully it will be streamlined. Thank you very much.
Mr. Waller.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Terry Waller, planning staff. The first item is file number AGP 2009-00019. It's a proposal by Russell Libby to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The project site consists of approximately 160 acres within the agricultural land use category and is located approximately 750 feet west of Ranchita Canyon Road and approximately 1 mile north of the intersection of Cross Canyon Road and Ranchita Canyon Road, and approximately 4.5 miles east of the community of San Miguel. The site is in the El Pomar Estrella planning area. And here is the exhibit. The property has been used historically as grazing land and dry farm grain. It qualifies for a 100-acre minimum preserve with approximately 144 acres of land with class 4, 6, 7 soils described in the Natural Resource Conservation Soils or Service Soil Survey as moderately to well-suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the agricultural preserve is 320 acres based on the rangeland capability, and the appropriate term is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Have any questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll open to the public. Anyone in the public care to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. I will make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by myself, second by Mr. Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Next one, please.
The next item is file number AGP 2009-00021. It's a proposal by William Bianchi to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The project site consists of 160 acres within the agriculture land use category and is located approximately 2,000 feet east of San Simeon Creek Road, 5.5 miles northeast of the intersection of San Simeon Creek Road and Highway 1, and approximately 5 miles northeast of the urban reserve line of Cambria. The site is in the Adelaida planning area. This property has been used historically as grazing land for cattle. The property qualifies for a 100-acre minimum preserve size with approximately 146 acres of land with Class 3, 6, and 7 soils described in the Natural Resource Conservation Service Soils Survey as moderately to well-suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the agricultural preserve is 320 acres based on the rangeland capability, and the appropriate term is 20 years. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to establish an agricultural preserve.
Happy questions from the board. The vote of the public, Mr. Bianchi.
Bill Bianchi, I'm here just to indicate that if there are any questions, please don't hesitate to ask them.
Thank you, sir. Seeing no other requests, I'll bring it back to the board and do the supervisor of the district.
Mr. Chairman, I move staff's recommendation.
Second. Been moved by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes. Next, please.
The next item is file number AGP 2009-00022. It's a proposal by PM Ranch to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve to reflect a lot line adjustment, rescind existing contracts, simultaneously enter into a new contract, and add approximately 62 acres for a total acreage of 1,125 acres. The site is located at 4055 Via Creek Road, approximately 1.2 miles east of Via Creek Road and approximately 3.5 miles northwest of the community of Cayucas. The site is in the agriculture land use category and Adelaide planning area. The existing preserve and contract qualifies as rangeland property. A previous addition of land was added in 2007. The land to be added consists of class 6 and 7 soils that are listed as moderately suited as rangeland in this case, and that's from the Natural Resource Conservation Service Soil Survey. This property qualifies for the program as an addition to an existing agricultural preserve and land conservation contract according to the following provision in the rules of procedure. A property owner under contract who acquires adjacent parcels of any size may add this land by amendment of the existing agricultural preserve and contract. Although small in size, the added land will offer additional value as grazing land and will bring the total acreage under this contract to approximately 1,125 acres. The amended agricultural preserve will properly reflect the new boundaries of the ranch with the added land and consolidate the property into a single agricultural preserve. Later in the year, a new contract will be brought forward to your board for approval on consent, which will consolidate the existing contracts and the added land into a single contract. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of the amended agricultural preserve with a minimum parcel size of 320 acres and a 20-year term. That concludes my presentation.
Mr. Chairman, just a question to staff about the contract versus the preserve. Your staff recommendation talks about rescinding contracts and entering new contracts, and I think you just said that there was new contracts coming forward, so I'm curious as to, are we actually acting on the contract here?
No, you're not. It's a two-stage process. First, we establish or amend an agricultural preserve, and then later in the year, on the consent calendar, we will bring the contract forward to you, which will consolidate the land into a single new contract.
Okay. So I'll
you're not taking that action formally today. That's part of the proposal, though.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone from the audience? None? Bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I will move approval of staff's recommendation regarding the matter of altering the boundaries of the Ag Preserve.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes. Next, please.
The next item is also by the same landowner. It's file number AGP 2009-00023, proposal by PM Ranch. This is to alter and expand the boundaries of an agricultural preserve, rescind an existing contract, and simultaneously enter into a new contract while adding approximately 20 acres for a total acreage of approximately 915 acres. The site is located at 4077 Via Creek Road, approximately 1.2 miles east of Via Creek Road and approximately 3.5 miles northwest of the community of Cayucas. The site is in the agriculture land use category and Adelaida planning area. The existing preserve and contract qualified as rangeland property. A previous addition of land was also added in 2007 in this case, as well as the previous one. The majority of the land to be added consists of class 6 and 7 soil that is listed as moderately to well-suited as rangeland in the Natural Resource Conservation Service's soil survey. And similarly, the added property qualifies for the program as an addition to land, which I just I read the provision from the Rules of Procedure on the previous item. It's the same situation. The added land will offer some additional value as grazing land and will bring the total acreage under this contract up to approximately 915 acres. The amended agricultural preserve will properly reflect the new boundaries of the ranch with the added land, consolidate the property into a single agricultural preserve, and then again later when we bring a new contract to your board, it will consolidate the land into a single new contract. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of the amended agricultural preserve with a minimum parcel size of 320 acres and a 20-year term. That concludes my comments on this one.
Any questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes. Next.
The next item is file number AGP 2009-00024. It is a proposal by Jason Moore to alter and expand the boundaries of an existing agricultural preserve and contract by adding approximately 40 acres. This will result in a total of 407 acres. The site is located within the agriculture land use category, approximately half a mile north of Sea Canyon Road and approximately 2.5 miles southwest of the city of San Luis Obispo. The site is located in the San Luis Bay planning area. The existing preserve and contract previously qualified as rangeland property. The land to be added consists of class 4 and 7 soils, and although much of the property is steeply sloping, the more level portions of the property will offer some additional grazing land for cattle grazing. And this property also qualifies for the program as an addition to land based on the section of the Rules of Procedure which I previously read, similar to the previous two items. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 320 acres and the remaining term of the existing contract, which is approximately 10 years, as the appropriate term. And that would conclude my comments on the final item.
Thank you. Questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. No request. I'll bring it back to the supervisor of the district. Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Hill. Seconded by Supervisor Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am. Introduce our last item, please.
Certainly. That would be item C2, a hearing to consider a resolution to certify the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector Trail Final Environmental Impact Report. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Chair Meacham and members of the board.
Your microphones.
Again, good morning, Chair Meacham, members of the Board of Supervisors. This morning we have with us from Planning Department Jeff Olivera and our planner, Park Planner 3, Elizabeth Kavanaugh, to present this report.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, Board of Supervisors. I'm Elizabeth, your Park County Park staff. Today you're being asked to certify the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector Environmental Impact Report. And I'd like to remind you this is just to certify the environmental impact report. We're not moving forward with the project at this time. We already covered that. I wanted to go over a history of this project. It's been in the works since 2004. We've done an extensive collaboration project with several the advisory councils and several committees within the communities, and also state parks and Caltrans. We did an environmental constraints analysis in 2006 to see if this trail was feasible. It turned out that it probably was. When we moved forward during that analysis and started looking at alignments, several alignments were looked at. Two major alignments were picked. One was the eastern alignment and the western alignment at this point. We moved into the environmental impact report in 2009. We chose the western alignment as the major project, but kept the eastern alignment, did a full evaluation on that just in case. That's where we ended up, because at this point we don't have a project. We have two alignments to choose from in the future. A year later, we have a final environmental impact report, took that to the Parks and Recreation Commission in August of this year, where they recommended 4-0 that you certify this environmental impact report. As I mentioned, it's a collaborative process. We worked with all of these agencies and community groups to work on the alignment and the project description itself. It's been several years and several meetings with these agencies. In addition, we met with Caltrans many times, met with Chevron, Morro Bay, Cayucas Advisory Council, and finally we had a scoping meeting in the community of Cayucas. So this is what we ended up with. We have two alignments. This is a completion of a connector trail between existing trail systems, between Morro Bay's trail systems and Cayucas' trail system. We have kind of a no man's land in between, and this trail will allow us to get between the two communities. It's an important segment of the non-motorized transportation between the two communities. Where the existing trails are, they will remain, they're class 2 or class 3, and where the new trail, where there isn't any trails, it will be class 1. A class 1 trail is completely separated from traffic. A class 2 trail shares the road with traffic, but is lined and separated through line and signed. And then a class 3 trail is just a trail that's there, and you wouldn't really see it by looking at the road. It's designated, but there's no markings. So as I mentioned, we have existing trails in Morro Bay. Here's a class 1 trail through the cloisters. We have a non-designated trail, class 3, through this area of Morro Bay. And then in the community of Cayucas, we have existing trails, class 3 at this point, throughout the community. This segment here is the connector part where we will be doing new construction. We broke this trail up into 5 segments because each has a little different flavor. Here we are in the existing Cloisters Trail. This is a Class 1 trail. Then going through the neighborhoods of Morro Bay, this is a Class 3 trail. This project will turn it into a lined, we'll paint lines on the road and put signs here in this community of Morro Bay. Segment 1 is already physically existing. Segment 2 is where our new construction will start. It starts here at Toro Road. It's about
Yerba Buena.
About
starts at Yerba Buena.
Yerba Buena, excuse me. And it's about a mile and a half here. We are running along the very close to the highway here. This is where we'll have to do some new construction, starting with our Class 1 trail. Coming over to the North Point Natural Area, there's a remnant road here that we'll remove and use and replace with trail. And there's also an eastern alignment that I mentioned earlier, and that will start here and run on the eastern side of the highway. Segment 3 is about a half a mile and starts here at the end of the North Point Natural Area. We run here along very close to the highway. We actually run in Caltrans right-of-way here and forward past Toro Creek, where we need to extend a bridge. Now here's where we come across our first Class 1 impact, and Jeff will expand on this a little bit later, but because we are so close here to the highway, we need to construct a safety barrier to ensure safety between the trail users and the traffic on Highway 1. And here's a little picture just to give you an idea of how close we are to the highway in this area and why a safety barrier is necessary. And here's the Toro Creek Bridge, which we will be extending to accommodate this trail. Moving on to segment 4, we'll be traveling along here. It's about a mile and a quarter, traveling along the bluff for the most part. We have two bridges here, a 70-foot and a 50-foot bridge to span over these drainage areas, and then a culvert that we'll be filling here. Again, our eastern alignment will run along the highway on the eastern side along this path. Finally, segment 5, we end up in Cayucas. It starts right here in southern Cayucas. Proposed to run along Studio Drive, as you see by this blue line. It's about a mile and a half, a mile and a quarter, I would say. There's a parking area here that we will be, as part of the project, we'll be restriping and organizing right now. It's kind of a haphazard parking area, and we'll be cleaning that up and making that more accommodating for parking. Where did my arrow go? Right here. And then we travel down Studio Drive, separating here at Old Creek, either moving down along the beach to 24th Street beach parking lot, or if you choose so, you can also run along the eastern side along Norma Rose Park. And at this point, my project ends. However, Cayucas' existing bike trail system picks up here, and you can go all the way to downtown Cayucas on this trail system. We did an environmental impact report for this along with the scoping meeting, and I'm going to turn those details over to Jeff Oliveira of the Planning Department.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Meacham, members of the board. I'm Jeff Oliveira, environmental specialist. For my part, I assisted County Parks with the management of the EIR that was prepared for this project and that we're asking for certification today. As Elizabeth mentioned, the project has a long history of collaborative work with the community, with jurisdictional and funding agencies, and other agencies, including the Coastal Commission, City of Morro Bay, Coastal Conservancy, Caltrans, and SLOCOG. Through that extensive scoping process and NOP process, county staff worked with the stakeholders and agencies on framing the issues to be looked at in the EIR process. Some issues that came to the forefront you'll see before you, which include biological issues associated with rare species like the snowy plover, hazards associated with bicycle traffic, in particular on Studio Drive, and also the parking availability and general safety along parts of the trail close to Highway 1. Next slide. Through that process, staff worked on a draft EIR and circulated that for public review. The draft EIR included two significant unavoidable Class 1 impacts. You'll see on the slide in front of you, and as Elizabeth mentioned, the barrier system proposed along Segment 3 is visible to vehicle traffic along Highway 1. That impact is an aesthetic impact and was looked at as a Class 1 impact through a conservative approach in the EIR. We have a couple slides we'll show you as well, but basically It is required by Caltrans to have a safety barrier separating trail users and traffic along Highway 1. The EIR looked at tank version of that barrier. It's about a 4.5-foot concrete and chain link fence barrier. We saw it as a Class 1 impact. However, we included mitigation in the effect of design standards that could be used to soften the look of that barrier and reduce those impacts to the extent feasible. In addition, another Class 1 impact that was included in the EIR deals with a bluff retreat on a portion of the trail along the bluff tops between the beach and Highway 1. That portion of the bluff top is proposed to have a trail within the 25-year bluff top erosion setback. Coastal Commission identifies a threshold of 75-year setback. Because we're within that, we called that a Class 1, again, using a conservative approach to the EIR and addressing that impact through design standards, through erosion sedimentation control. And that's a primarily seen as a human health and safety standard through the Coastal Commission. Again, it's important to note that the proposed trail doesn't include any actual structural development. It's just a trail. We would have the ability to close during high erosive storm events, close that trail to the public, and accept the maintenance requirements for a bluff top erosion issue with that trail, which is pretty common in our coastal trail system up and down the state. The next slide shows an example of the existing view along a section of the proposed trail. This is a photo simulation you see before you showing the proposed barrier system. This is what the EIR called out as a Class 1 impact. You'll see it's a concrete barrier topped with a fence. It's looked at, again, as a Class 1 impact. However, this design is subject to change. Elements like texturing, ironwork, design features can and color treatment can soften that impact as well. Moving on.
Mr. Saj, do you have a question on that part?
Not necessarily a question. It's something I shared with staff, knowing that this is not just in front of us, and it will have to go to the coastal. Some of the experience that I have, when you have such a solid wall, you'll have some challenges to face, and my proposal was obviously coloring, but some openings within the wall, that it will take up that massiveness. It's still a solid wall, but like a windows going through in a shape that maybe also in an angle when you're driving that direction, you can almost see through the wall. I hope you're not doing that as you drive 55 miles an hour. But the iron work on the top can be a little more architecturally suitable for the area. I think the chances will be better to succeed at the coastal level than just here.
And that's right, and Supervisor Asajian brings up a good point in that eventually we would have to come back to the Planning Commission for a coastal development permit for the eventual preferred alignment that's going to be chosen. In that time, we can work on design features like windows in the barrier, more decorative texturing, coloring treatment, and so forth that we could kind of soften that visual impact.
Gibson? And it's my understanding from staff, and looking at the picture, I agree, they've identified a worst-case scenario here.
Right.
I think we would have difficulty with this particular design, but we're looking at the environmental impacts today. And
exactly, so for purposes of...
I agree, there's a lot of work to be done for the project.
And that's kind of a theme throughout, is the kind of a more of a conservative approach to our analysis. We covered the bluff top erosion. And the EIR looked at other impacts considered significant but mitigable. And through the scoping and NOP process, these were a concern with our stakeholders and with our agencies. In particular, biological resource impacts related to wetlands, fording habitat along Toro Creek,
and their associated sensitive plant and animal species. These were considered in the EIR, and we did an extensive analysis showing, in particular, where ESHA can be mapped on the site, and included impacts and mitigation measures for those impacts in the EIR that reduce those impacts to less than significant levels. And in general, geologic impacts were also looked at in addition to the bluff top issues, mainly associated with drainage and erosion and sedimentation issues along the bluff tops and along the drainage areas that will be crossed as a part of this project. Moving along, the EIR also looked at alternatives. And the proposed project that was looked at through the EIR was a western alignment alternative. However, through the scoping process and through a detailed environmental constraints report, an east side alignment was looked at for comparative purposes, and it was analyzed in full project detail in the EIR to basically get more utility out of that published EIR. In addition to the eastern alignment, other alignments were looked at as well as alternatives, including an east-west alignment that kind of combines the two, an alignment that sticks to the right-of-way of Highway 1, and, of course, a no-project alternative.
Right-of-way alignment was appealing at first. However, our several meetings with Caltrans indicated that it wasn't something that they wanted, was this trail in their right-of-way, and essentially said, if there's no other place, if you can't do it anywhere else, then consider the right-of-way. Otherwise, if it's feasible elsewhere, please stay out of our right-of-way.
That's right.
So that's partially why that wasn't chosen.
And this slide shows a little bit of the eastern alignment that we're talking about. The top two photos show portions of that alignment, and then the bottom photo there on your screen is a visual simulation showing the barrier needed along the eastern alignment, as well as the retaining walls to push back that slope a little bit. And you'll see it puts Highway 1 between the trail users and the coast.
Part of the reason why the eastern alignment was the western alignment was selected over the eastern alignment is for the user experience. Being closer to the beach is a preferred experience versus, as these pictures illustrate, more closer to the hills and the freeway.
Thank you. The reason we chose this site because you don't have problems concerning viewshed.
That's correct. The main visual consideration is from vehicle traffic looking out towards the coast versus this side, which doesn't have the same visual impact, however, requires a little bit more development in the way of retaining walls and engineering features like that.
Mr. Gibson, and the impact assigned to this was Class 2 because it wasn't between the highway and the coast?
That's correct, yeah.
Throughout this long process, we've heard lots from the community, and for this hearing alone, we've noticed 1,700 people. I've been fielding calls, and I've received about 30 phone calls on this project, and about three of them were opposed to it. These are what we've heard were the major reasons for opposition to this project, and I'd like to have an opportunity to address some of those. The first one is that the trail would increase the use of parking. And there was some auto bike conflict concerns, especially along Studio Drive. And then we recently heard that people were concerned that we would block access to the beach. Addressing the blocked access to the beach, our trail plans and mitigation clearly states continued access to the beach. We in no way have any intentions of limiting access to that beach area that we want to. We're proposing to build one of these alignments. Any fencing for the snowy plower or construction fencing also takes into consideration beach access. So we have been especially concerned with that throughout this process. This trail has 10 parking locations along the trail alignment, and it also includes 190 parking spots. So I think that we're covered on our parking area. An area that has become contentious is this parking area here on South Studio Drive. Right now it's a very informal parking area. There's bushes and there's really no organization there. It's kind of haphazard. And so I have a picture of that for you in a moment. But what really is happening here is that we have, let me get to my notes, excuse me, is that this parking area here, which I have a picture of here, can accommodate 12 parking spots currently right now if people were to park in an orderly fashion. As this picture shows you, they don't. It's kind of willy-nilly. What we're proposing to do here is clean up these bushes, stripe our parking. We get 13 parking spots once we do that, which is one more than is current. Our EIR took a look at the existing parking conditions through weekends, through holidays, and indicated that this parking lot is rarely, if ever, full, and that we're believing that this is a bike trail, and that this bike trail, with all the other parking options, this wouldn't be exacerbated any worse than the current conditions. In addition, I'd like to show the location of the Studio Drive parking lot here, kind of in the middle of this 4.5-mile trail alignment. I don't know how much trail parking will go here, considering there's plenty other parking opportunities at either end of the trail alignment. In addition, we heard several concerns about the bike-pedestrian conflict, especially along Studio Drive. Our EIR indicated that we would get, at most, between 50 to 100 trips per day. Now, again, this is a connector trail. We're connecting an existing community of Morro Bay to the existing community of Cayucas. It is our hopes that people won't be driving. They'll be using their bicycles. However, taking into consideration the 50 to 100 trips per day, that's equal to about 2 to 4 single-family houses as far as trip generation. We have mitigation in our EIR that talks about creating this area and other areas, roads along this trail, providing traffic calming or other opportunities to ease that transition between the bikes and the cars. The EIR has determined that this is not a significant impact and that it offered mitigation as a way of smoothing this, even though it didn't identify it as significant. So again, this is certifying an EIR. We are not asking for project approval at this point. As you mentioned, there is additional work that needs to be done on this project. Our next step is to go out to the community and those stakeholders and pick an alignment, and that will be through a series of public meetings. We'll also take this to the Park and Recs Commission for approval of the alignment. Then we go into our NEPA review. We'll go to the Planning Commission for our coastal permit. And again, your board will have plenty of opportunities to see this again before we construct this project.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Shears.
Something I also shared with staff yesterday, my concern trying to also bring issues here today, because it will be an issue at the coastal level. When we designate those parking structures or parking lots for this use, and it will attract more bicyclists, let's say, to come and park here, that will take away parking from those who will park to gain access to the coast. So we'll it's both serving good causes, but I just want to see if that will be a problem. Maybe we can address that early stages of this process, and maybe we can look further down where Chevron is, where we could possibly, if they have a project, maybe we can designate parking for the bicyclists at that location, because as you put the parking lots in place, obviously you're going to have handicap parking as well, which will then decrease the number of parking spots available. Just thinking, how would this work and not create more of a problem than otherwise?
Well, the EIR took a look at parking in all parking lots, not just Studio Drive. I focused in on that because that's where I heard most of the concerns coming from. All of the parking along this alignment is at 75% capacity or less, even on busy weekends. So there is some room for additional parking related to this trail. As far as addressing future needs, that's a parks function. Parks looks at all of their facilities and is continually improving it and addressing problems as we go along. So as they come up as part of this maintenance of this trail, we will be addressing those issues as they come.
Yeah, I know you will, and just want to bring it to your attention so that you prepare yourself for future challenges.
Yeah. So again, the Parks and Planning staff is requesting that you certify this environmental impact report, and we're available for any questions and comments you may have. In addition, David Foote of Firma, who was involved in the design and alignment process of this trail, is available for questions also. Thank you.
I just have one question, and you've mentioned this, and the board members have mentioned this a couple of times. There's still a lot of work to be done. Now, based upon those comments, if we were to certify an EIR, is there a danger of things that would be coming up that would that EIR would have to be revisited or a supplemental of some sort?
That's right. So we have some work to do on choosing an alignment and going through the NEPA process with that preferred alignment and getting our coastal development permit. Through that process, should any changes to the project occur that need to be looked at, we have the ability to revisit the EIR through several different ways. If there's no significant new information, we have the ability to do an addendum to the EIR. If design changes occur such that new impacts or new mitigation measures are required, we also have the ability to tear off of this EIR with a supplemental document as well. It's hard to say at this point what will come up. We definitely took a lot into consideration when we drafted this EIR through the intense scoping and collaborative process. So we think we have a good document, but if anything comes up, we have the ability to address it at any time.
In addition, Chairman Meacham, that's part of the reason why we did the dual alignment in this EIR and looked at both alignments within the project level, so that wherever we landed, we were covered in that document.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the next steps that staff didn't put on the slide was the search for dollars to make this real. And I think they actually have
a minor.
Yeah, well, I know it's not something we want to confront straight on, but having this certified EIR is important to potential funders and shows we've done our homework. A couple questions, if I might, and of course I wrote them down and then covered them up. Your traffic estimate of usage of the trail comes from what source?
It comes from existing Bob Jones activity and a traffic study throughout the EIR.
Okay, 50 to possibly a maximum of 100 bikes a day is the current thought?
50 to 100 vehicles.
Vehicles?
Per day.
On the trail?
Or that will be coming for the trail.
Okay, so the impact is couched in terms of automobiles who are approaching the trail to be used. Do we have any estimate of bike usage of the bike trail?
No, we don't. We found that particularly difficult to assess bike uses of the trail. There wasn't any tools out there that we could say this is a concrete answer. So
okay.
Much too speculative for an EIR.
Okay. And so we are looking, again, at an informational document here establishing impacts of the project. One of the questions that some had raised was we're going to lay down a certain amount of pavement across those bluff tops. We've got existing pieces, but let's talk about the bluff tops for a minute. And in the staff report, it references them as environmentally sensitive habitat areas, which is Coastal Commission and local coastal program language. But the biological analysis that I saw did not suggest there's anything particularly sensitive on top of those bluffs. And I was just curious, is there an explicit understanding that actually laying pavement where we've proposed it does not create environmental impacts?
You were right. We looked at those impacts extensively in the EIR, and although we didn't identify them as Class 1 unavoidable impacts, there are significant impacts that we deal with through extensive mitigation program. We do identify areas of ESHA along the trail, and that is, like you said, a Coastal Commission consideration. In particular, the trail itself along the bluff tops would result in some biological impacts, in particular dealing with jurisdictional waters and wetlands that come off the hillside underneath the highway and dump out on the west side of the highway. Those include seasonal wetlands as well. And then we do have impacts to special communities or habitats along that specific alignment that mainly relate to the fore dune habitat and, again, some freshwater and coastal salt marsh habitat that the trail cuts through. And in general, there were a few sensitive plants and animals that were looked at as possibly being impacted, in particular the tidewater goby, steelhead, and snowy plover, along with some sensitive plants as well. We have the ability to mitigate that through site restoration, bringing some of the more, they call it, ruderal or impacted by human action areas. You'll see a lot of the fore dunes there covered in ice plant and things, invasive species like that, that give us the opportunity to clean those up, bring them back to their natural habitat, and help mitigate some of those impacts.
The other topic I'd like to explore just a little bit is why we're calling out the bluff erosion as a Class 1 impact. The trail goes in, well, let me put it differently. There's a bluff erosion study in one of the appendices of the EIR that shows the bluff is actually accreting in some areas, retreating in other areas, complex system.
Yeah.
But it comes up with a maximum number of some 17 inches a year bluff retreat that may or may not actually impact the trail. You're taking the conservative approach and saying it is. That bluff retreat is going to happen anyway, if that report is correct.
Right.
And so I guess I'm wondering is how does the installation of this trail actually create an impact? I mean, I don't think we have to call this out as a Class 1 impact.
And that's a good consideration. And the example I use in explaining this is if you're going to build a house and it's located next to an earthquake fault, that house in and of itself isn't going to cause or an increased potential of an earthquake, but the earthquake in and of itself could impact the development of that house, and it's the same thing for this trail. The bluff top erosion is occurring naturally based on some of those drainages and wave action. The trail in and of itself is not necessarily going to create a bluff top erosion hazard, rather the erosion hazard has the potential to impact the trail. So it's a little bit of a distinction there, but that's where the impact
is. And I don't mean to be picking nits, but I think it's an important logical distinction, and one that will be important to the project when it comes forward. But it conflicts a little bit with your impacts of your geologic impacts, where you say it might alter drainage or
right.
erosion, but we can mitigate that by good design.
That's
and
right.
I guess in terms of the, you know, the actual retreat, we're worried about not having to armor the coastline against things like that. But where this is an issue, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that where this is an issue, Highway 1 itself is very close, and it would
right.
be threatened contemporaneously
That's
with
right.
with the trail. So again, I'd be interested, and we'll take public testimony here, but I'd be interested in your thoughts about whether we actually need to call that as a Class 1 impact, because, you know, do we need to go a statement of overriding considerations on it? Then let me just one other question, and I may have comments after public comment. In terms of the existing pieces of the trail system, you identify a lot of Class 3, some Class 1 and some Class 3 trails already in place. And is it my understanding that
all of the Class 3 are going to be upgraded to Class 2 as part of this project?
Yes, which simply means striping and signage.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, let's go to the public. Patricia Childress, first up, please, followed by Christine Johnson.
Good morning. My name is Trish. I'm a homeowner at 2948 Studio Drive, adjacent to Old Creek, or Willow Creek, actually, Old Creek Road. And I have a number of concerns, specifically when you talk about the scoping and all the groups that you consulted. To me, the obvious omission is the homeowners themselves that are involved, because the homeowners were only noticed for this meeting, not that there was an environmental report. I have discussed this with a number of my neighbors, including the very end at South Studio Drive, the Dwelly family, who was unaware that an environmental impact report was being done or that there was a project being proposed. I think that's a huge omission in the governmental process, that you reached out to all these agencies and completely ignored the residents along Studio Drive. I'm very disturbed by the use of the term mitigation. That seems to be a get-out-of-jail-free card, that it's the postponement of taking responsibility for issues that should be studied right now. I have witnessed bicycles going on our street, as is already done, and frequently many of these bicyclists are training for events, and speed seems to be no object to them, whereas the cars are definitely having to be careful because there are considerable pedestrians already on Studio Drive. And there are a number of parking issues where it narrows to the point that only one car can pass at a time, as it is right now. When you say you've measured traffic, I'm there every weekend, at least 3 days a week. I've seen no formal sense of traffic measurement for Studio Drive. I did call in and was told that somebody visited the street on Labor Day weekend. That hardly sounds like any kind of scientific traffic assessment to myself. I've talked to a number of my neighbors, and they all agree that at least some sort of traffic assessment should be taken because they're all very concerned where we are right now. It's a safety issue, as it is. You start adding more bicycles, and you're saying 100 bicycles. What happens if that's 200 bicycles? What then? Because law enforcement, as we have it right now, is one sheriff's officer from Morro Bay to Big Sur. There are a number of issues that already occur. How are you going to control that? You're just sort of skipping over this whole issue of how are you going to deal with these conflicts of bikers and autos. I think it's going to be a whole lot more than 100 bicycles. And I see that my time's up, and I thank you for the opportunity.
We have some answers for you here in a moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Christine Johnson, followed by Mrs. Eisman, please. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Christine Johnson, a resident of Morro Bay. Today I'm pleased to present a letter of support for the Morro Bay to Cayugas Connector on behalf of the all-volunteer Morro Bay 4th of July Committee. Morro Bay 4th is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to celebrate Independence Day with family-friendly, alcohol-free, traditional 4th of July picnic celebration and fireworks show in Morro Bay for residents and visitors to enjoy. Last year's 4th of July event in Morro Bay also included the inaugural 4th of July bike parade from Morro Rock to Tidelands Park along the Embarcadero. The committee was hoping for about 100 participants, so we were thrilled when over 350 bikers of all ages and abilities came to the bike parade. Based on the number of participants at last year's 4th of July bike parade, it's clear that our community is enthusiastic about biking. The Board of Directors of Morro Bay 4th believes that the Morro Bay to Cayucos Connector will serve to enhance the accessibility, marketability, and attractiveness of our treasured coastal communities to visitors and would infuse our region with much-needed and sought-after bicycle tourist revenue. According to the League of American Bicyclists, there are over 57 million cyclists in the United States. Americans are hopping on their bikes for fun, fitness, recreation, and transportation. San Luis Obispo County is already nationally recognized as a bike-friendly region. The Morro Bay to Cayucos connector would enhance our county's reputation and encourage more visitors to plan biking vacations along the Central Coast. In closing, may I be the first to invite you, along with your family and friends, to join us in Morro Bay on the 4th in 2011. Bring your bike and ride with us in the parade. This letter is signed by Dan Podesto, the president of the Board of Directors of Morro Bay 4th. Now I'd like to speak just briefly as a private citizen in Morro Bay and also as a parent who lives very close to the connector path on the Morro Bay side. And my fingers are crossed for a west side placement of the path to minimize dangerous crossings of very busy Highway 1 by families who would be coming to use the path. So thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Mrs. Eisman, please. Followed by Jeff Bard.
Good morning. I'm Mary Ellen Eisman. I'm terribly nervous. I live at 3499 Studio Drive, and I found out about this meeting just recently when I got a letter in the mail, and I probably won't get to talk enough. But before that, not this lady, but another lady and some men came to the... I live on the corner of Studio and Haynes. They came to my front yard, or the street of Haynes, which is my door opens onto it, and were there discussing that they were going to build an underpass under the Highway 1 in front of my house. And I have to tell you, I really lost it. I totally lost it. I said, my father worked for the Division of Highways all his life. I'm from San Luis Obispo. I live permanently in Cayucas. And I truly lost it when they started talking about building an underpass in my front door. I could not understand it. And I think eventually they decided that was not a good place to do it. And now I believe it scared me when I read in the reports today that there was a thought of building a access across under the, I can't talk, the highway down by the cemetery. And I'm totally against an underpass. Who would monitor it? Who would police it? Who would clean it? I just don't know what to say, you guys. I agree with everything the lady said before. We did not get any input from anyone except I met the park lady, and I was not a very good person at that moment. But it really scared me that they were thinking of doing that. And I know there's other issues. I don't understand. I just don't know what to say, you guys. I'm totally concerned about the bike path, which I think is a good idea, but I sure don't want any underpasses for the people in Cayucas to have to try to clean up after and monitor, because we will have no one else to do it, and it doesn't matter where it is. The other thing I wanted to say, we have a signal at Old Creek Road. If the bikes have to cross the highway, couldn't they cross at the signal like everybody else? Do they have to have a special underpass? I don't know, you guys. As I say, I'm sort of blown away by this whole thing. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Jeffrey Bard, please.
Earlier, I quoted Chuang Tzu to the effect, what good are silk hats if we behave as wild men? And the upshot being, what good is testimony if we don't listen? But this is a case of good government at work. That being said, it's very important that we who ride bicycles stay friends with the private property owners, and I look forward to working with those folks going forward to address their concerns. Cayucas is a fantastic community. I recall the CAC rallied to defend 11 cypress trees from a very misguided proposal. And the bicycles are a great bunch of people, so I'm sure that this is all going to work out for the better. I own 5 bicycles and no car. You recently may have seen my John Howard signature series, cleverly disguised with paint, both to deter theft and to cover up the girly man turquoise and white motif that the factory came with. My sister is a nationally ranked cyclist, and unfortunately my first brother-in-law, was killed on his bicycle by a drunk driver. My sister then went out and married yet another professional bicycle mechanic, much to my mother's disconcerting. I was fortunate to be able to lobby Governor Schwarzenegger in person regarding bicycle as per the front cover of the Daily Sound, July 7th of that year, with Abel Maldonado present as well. Okay, so I know a little bit about riding bikes. In fact, I did some surfing on the concrete last week, and I still have a scar on my upper lip. And fortunately, my hand is, I can move my hand again. Great response by the emergency responders. Bicycling can be very dangerous, and the safety concerns must be heeded. And I would prefer bicycles on the West Ocean side as much as possible, but I would suggest that we share, perhaps in certain segments, we can go ahead and not have the aesthetic problem of the wall and go ahead and take the other side of the road. Let's just work this out in a sharing manner. I'm concerned also on Bluff Retreat. The point is, I think future armoring requests will come up if we develop. And also, if the erosion does create a problem, there's going to be a repair impact. So that's how it could become a coastal impact. I very much appreciate Supervisor Achadian's remarks regarding aesthetics, and I would suggest even perhaps natural rock, maybe RFP to artists, maybe some respite zones where there is nothing, but, you know, pure, let's mix it up a little bit. Full mitigation of all ESHA, and also I was privileged to attend the Coast and Ocean Regional Roundtable where we discussed Save Our Shores No Butts About It program, which was creating cigarette butt receptacles that look kind of like fish, and education programs to mitigate. And some bicyclists do smoke, so let's mitigate the cigarette butt impact, too.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close public comment. Staff, Mr. Black, maybe you could, I'd like to assure Mrs. Eisman, as well as the others, of the process here and the opportunity for them to be able to be participatory in that process. So can you address the concerns that's been raised here today?
I believe I can assure them that there will be a collaborative process, that the neighborhood will be noticed of the public meetings where we will design in features that help to coordinate the vehicle and pedestrian and bicycle interactions. We've made that commitment in writing in the EIR as mitigation, specifically in your neighborhood. I do recall when the county parks folks went to the neighbors with a survey to see what their response was, either crossing over Highway 1 or underneath. Very strong support for above the surface crossover, just as our neighbors said. There wasn't much support for using a tunnel under Highway 1. So that approach isn't even under consideration. Well, we do encourage the folks, our stakeholders, to stay in touch, keep an eye out, because we will have another visit to Parks and Recreation Commission. We will involve the bicycle community, the communities of Cayucas and Morro Bay, and we will have to connect again for the Coastal Commission permits. These are a number of public meetings and opportunities to track the projects and see just what is proposed down the road. If we all work together on it, we can provide some solutions that are going to meet the vast majority of these concerns.
I think, too, that the concern about mitigation measures that have been suggested and traffic counts, as this progresses, and I would assume that there'll be community meetings taking place in Morro Bay, Cayucas, there'll be an opportunity to engage in that discussion and make your voices heard. Okay, any questions, Mr. Sajjan?
Yeah, when we spoke of 1700 communications, did that include the neighborhood? Can we then be sure that she is on our mailing list? Get our communications.
She is on our mailing list, and we will.
Okay.
Put a star by it. Get a special invitation to that lady. Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, a couple questions, and I'll move to a motion here. I wanted to revisit the question of alternatives here. We talked about an eastern alternative and one that does include some Caltrans right away. If you could bring up an aerial that has segment 5 on it, the one that starts at South Studio Drive. You know, for colleagues,
again, we're certifying an EIR, which simply means that we're deciding that this document has adequately assessed the impacts of the project and its alternatives. In terms of the project itself, you know, we are hearing that there's one sticky point here, and that's the question of how this bike trail interacts at the very south end of Cayucas in Studio Drive. And there's proposals in here we'll talk about. But I did want to ask, as we go from the south end of Cayucas, there is, to my eye at least, driving by it at least twice a day, the possibility of aligning essentially a Class 1 bike lane in the Caltrans right-of-way that's just above that row of houses, right in there. The yellow line obscures it. And I'm curious as to why that's not included as one of the alternatives.
Again, we had detailed conversations with Caltrans, who really made it clear to us that they didn't want this trail in there right-of-way unless there was no other option.
So is that tantamount to a determination that it's infeasible?
Yeah, pretty close.
And it's important to consider the idea is, you know, to meet the objectives of the project, which is to focus a little bit more on the coastal experience for trail riders, but also to, as much as possible, minimize the conflicts between trail users and vehicle traffic. It was seen that if you look at the comparison between Studio Drive and Highway 1, obviously Highway 1 is more of a safety concern with the speeds and traffic along that route. Studio Drive offered a more attractive alternative based on user experience and safety as well.
Okay.
In addition, our goal with this is to increase bicycle users between these two communities. That's the goal of this project. There is currently bicyclists, those people who bicycle across the state, who do use that right-of-way as a bicycle path. We already have that market of bicyclists using that path.
The shoulder of the highway.
We're trying to reach out to, as the public testimony spoke to, the parents and the recreational users and the tourists and the people who live in Cayucas who could ride their bike to Morro Bay who aren't comfortable riding next to a car going 65
okay.
miles an hour.
And so it's my understanding that the project description in this part of the project is to convert this from a Class 3 to a Class 2 with also potential other traffic calming treatments of Studio Drive?
Yes, we have a mitigation that requires that we do a plan that ensures that bicyclists and pedestrians can work better in this area and along the trail and where we have the neighborhood, trails in the neighborhood, that can include anything from bollards elevation change. I mean, there's lots of opportunities that we can do. And we also, as part of this mitigation, is to take that out to the community and to the various stakeholders and, again, prolong that collaboration.
So part of this project could be an extensive retreatment of that piece of Studio Drive for all users, essentially.
Yes.
Supervisors would be pleased to know that this particular route would also be supported by your policy and your park and recreation element, which notes we would provide a separate bike path near Highway 1 whenever parallel local roads are not available. Since we have the parallel local road available, and it is currently a Class 3 bike lane, this would not be such a radical move, and it would be consistent with your parks and recreation element.
Okay, thank you. And then, before making a motion, I just wanted to be sure that there were two significant commenters. One is Mr. Debritz, who's a resident at the south end of Studio Drive. I think that most of his concerns have been addressed as you've gone here. But the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council also commented their letters on page 19 of our staff report. And I just wanted to, I think many of their concerns have been addressed as well. But I did want to get into a couple of them. One of them they note, and this is actually on page 20, that there are no simulations of the visual impact of the bridge spanning Toro Creek. And were those done, and what's the aesthetic impact of that as opposed to the barrier?
The idea behind that was that Toro Creek's an existing bridge. By extending it to add the proposed trail, it wasn't looked at as a the significant impact that adding a new barrier would. By extending Toro Creek Bridge, it would be seen from a visual standpoint as just a continuation, just slight extension of what is an existing facility already.
So Class 3 or properly designed Class 2 mitigated.
That's right.
Okay. Their next quick question, again, a biologic impact of the safety barriers and the migration of animals and things like that, has that been looked at?
Yes, and we did an extensive survey on that, and the biggest concern with that is with steelhead in particular and their use of Toro Creek to access upper tributaries. As far as migration corridors, Highway 1 is a pretty good existing
barrier
between the uplands and the beach as well. So we wouldn't be extending or exacerbating that impact with this project.
Okay, thank you. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to make a motion unless other colleagues have questions.
One of our colleagues, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up with a question Supervisor Gibson asked regarding Studio Drive. It's currently Class 3, and it would become a Class 2 as part of this connector trail, which typically requires a greater width and striping to have a designated bike lane, and I'm curious to know if there is adequate width on Studio Drive to accommodate both the parking there along Studio Drive at the residences, as well as having a 4 foot or 5 foot wide designated bike lane. In other words, by going from Class 3 to Class 2, you're not going to be eliminating any parking on Studio Drive?
Essentially, the difference between Class 2 and Class 3 is the striping and the signage. So there won't be an additional width required. Right now, there is a bike trail, but it's not clearly marked. So we'll be making that clearly. The County Parks feels that clearly marking that will make that a safer area and kind of organize that area and hopefully eliminate some of the problems that the neighbors are foreseeing.
Mr. Gibson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As staff indicated, this is the certification of an EIR, which is simply to know that we got the impacts properly analyzed. We'll be moving forward with a project in coming weeks, months, and potentially years. I do believe that there has been a lot of attention to detail. There's other issues that need yet to be worked out, but that is appropriate for the project stage. So I will move that we certify the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector Final Environmental Impact Report in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA and instruct the chairperson to sign that resolution.
And as amended?
Second. And as amended by the
findings.
Core agenda. Yes, as amended by the findings, which point out that we don't need to make statements of overriding considerations.
Do you have the motion?
Yes, Mr. Hill was the second, correct?
Yes, okay. Hill was the second. Roll call.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham.
Yes. I have no public request on closed session, Mr. Jensen.
20 or 30 minutes.
Thank you. We stand adjourned.